This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Xiaoning. It's 9:36 a.m. Friday the 8th of May. And before we get into the KLCI updates and what's been happening there, we're having an event later on this afternoon, a webinar, because nothing is certain but death and taxes, as the saying goes, even amidst this pandemic. So if you have financial questions on either topic, you're going to want to join us later on at 12 p.m. because Ringgit and Sense presents Roshan Kanisan and BFM founder Malik Ali will be discussing death, taxes and the MCO with a panel of financial experts. So do head on over to our Facebook page at 12:30 today and come up with your questions.
Yeah, because everybody should be doing some sort of tax planning. It's not called tax evasion, it's called tax planning, guys. And it makes a lot of sense. Meanwhile, very quickly on the KLCI, is still in the green, is up 0.55% to 1384. The rest of the region is also in the green, except for Singapore, which is down 0.03%. In terms of the top value stocks, not much changes. Green Packet is still at the top of the list with 20 million ringgit traded, up 5.5 cents to 80.5 cents.
All right, and this morning we're taking a look at the subject of contact tracing because, you know, as countries around the world are weathering this COVID-19 pandemic, the subject of contact tracing apps has come up and whether or not they help contain future outbreaks. And the opinion generally seems to be that it isn't the be-all and end-all in fighting COVID-19. So just this week, the WHO has come out to say that contact tracing apps cannot replace old-fashioned boots-on-the-ground surveillance measures due to the demanding detective work that comes with interviewing people.
Yeah, there are also, of course, questions about privacy infringement. You know, are you going to be okay to let the government know where you're going, what you're doing, and with whom? I think these are questions that we'll have to ask.
So this morning, we have to weigh in on this Benjamin Cowling, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong. Thank you very much for joining us, Ben. So first of all, let's start with how effective are contact tracing apps really in helping to combat the pandemic that we're all experiencing?
The reason we want to do contact tracing is because we know by the time we diagnose a case, they may have already passed on infection to someone else. So we need to get ahead of the virus, find out who might have already been infected, and then look at those people, maybe put them into quarantine or something so they can't spread the virus onwards. We can do manual contact tracing, but a limitation is that we don't know about everybody that you or me have met in the past few days. Who did we stand next to on the bus? Who did we sit next to on the train? Who was in the restaurant when we were there having our lunch? We don't know. So that's where these apps come into play because they can record anybody, even strangers that you meet.
So, Ben, it sounds like it has to be a combination of both, right? So it has to be contact tracing apps and also manual, right? Because if you say the issue with manual is that, you, like you say, in the bus, you don't know who you sat next to. In a restaurant, you didn't know who you kind of were close to. So what's the best approach? Is it a hybrid or both?
I think manual can go a long way because the most likely people that you or me have infected would be our family members, our work colleagues, our friends and social contacts. The person that we were next to on the bus or the train or whatever has a lower risk. But I think if we can add in the apps, it would help because we have seen transmission in bars and restaurants and public transport. And that's really difficult to stop with manual contact tracing.
But WHO also does maintain that human-led contact tracing is still the most effective way to in this COVID-19 fight. Others argue, of course, that it's also too slow. So where do you stand in this?
I think the apps are still being developed. They're not really finalized. They're not quite ready for use. And there are going to be questions about uptake or maybe enforcement. If people can choose to use them or choose not to, maybe they won't be as effective. So I think apps are still in the early days. And for now, we do need to rely on manual contact tracing if we're going to go for contact tracing.
And like you say, you mentioned issues about privacy. You know, you know, there's a lot of concern here that governments will be asking people to sign up. And with that, right, there's going to be surveillance in a way, of course, which poses serious privacy concerns. Is there any way for these apps to be useful, but at the same time protect your data privacy?
So Apple and Google are working together on a system that would, in theory, protect privacy. So the way it would work, according to Apple and Google, is that every phone would ping the phones around them, identify who they might have had contact with, and then if you or me are a case, our phone will ping those other phones and alert them, send them a message that they've been in close contact with me a case or you a case. And then those people will be able to decide what to do. They can choose to quarantine themselves at home. They can choose to tell the government that they're a contact, or they can choose to do nothing. I think Apple and Google have been very careful not to make it a requirement that governments are notified, because that would really reduce the potential uptake, I think. But now, if we do it this way, then we're relying on people to voluntarily comply with the actions that are suggested by the app. For example, asking you, would you mind staying at home for the next 2 weeks?
So, but then the uptake itself is also a problem, right? Because the success of these apps is predicated on you, me, everyone else having the app on their phone. So, you know, do you think making it mandatory to download these contact tracing apps like China did, is this the best way forward?
I think it's going to be difficult to enforce like a mandatory one. In China, it wasn't exactly the same. In China, they do a lot of contact tracing through their facial recognition, through the CCTVs that they have everywhere, and through tracking people's mobile phones, whether they can, allow it or not. The Chinese government simply does it. The app that's required in China is a health status app that you need to show if you want to use public transport, if you want to enter public buildings in big cities. And so that's not exactly an app used for contact tracing. It's an app used to control movement. And it, you know, in other countries, I think probably those kind of apps wouldn't be acceptable. And also people wouldn't accept the government monitoring their movements and their behaviors in the same way as happens in China. So I think we're a long way from going down the path that China has gone. But I think there is going to be at least strong encouragement for people to use the Google and the Apple apps, which come out, and then that would be a voluntary process with privacy and data security, but then requiring people's goodwill to comply with the recommendations that are issued.
So, Ben, that's the issue, right? How do we then get people to sign up voluntarily and also then practice some sort of discipline in terms of, like, you know, volunteering their information or self-regulating?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. I think the most difficult thing is going to be, I think people will be willing to install the app given the privacy concerns are addressed, given it's shown that the app doesn't send information to the government. But the problem's going to be compliance with quarantine recommendations. For example, if you or me get a message that says, you know, a few days ago we were in a restaurant and there's now a confirmed case that was sitting in the same restaurant, so we should now stay at home for 14 days. Are you or me going to do that? Because that's a lot of time to spend at home on the off chance that we might have been infected when we were in that restaurant. Maybe we have, maybe we haven't. And so at the moment with contact tracing in places like Hong Kong, there's no choice. The government comes to find you, says you were in that restaurant, you need to come with me to the quarantine center for 14 days, pack your stuff. And so that's a different approach. I think the voluntary compliance is going to be difficult and would reduce the effectiveness of contact tracing.
And will technology-driven contact tracing, so through these apps, only work, though, in perhaps more developed countries? Because, first of all, you need people to have smartphones. You need to be able to be signed onto a data plan or have easy access to Bluetooth and internet to use the apps in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But I think smartphone penetration is pretty high in many parts of the world now. So it would be possible for these kind of apps to at least help. I mean, that in some parts of the world, that's true, that the maybe not everybody would have smartphones. But I think going forwards, it would be a useful approach and it would help. But I think still manual contact tracing, as WHO said, would be the best solution in the short term.
What else should we have besides manual tracing? Going back to the old-fashioned tests and tests and tests again?
So what we found in Hong Kong is that testing isn't enough, because when we diagnose cases, they've often been ill for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days. And that means they've probably already passed on infection if they're going to, because the most infectious time is around the time that symptoms first appear, maybe a little bit before, a little bit after. So testing itself is not enough to control transmission. We need to get ahead of the virus by doing the contact tracing to find who might be infected, and then those people should be quarantined.
And I'm curious, right, Benjamin, where in places where they have this contact tracing app, who is it regulated by? You know, is it just one government agency? Because, for example, in Malaysia, we have three at the moment. And even we are confused how it works. I mean, how does it kind of should ideally be kind of functioning?
I think it's still early days for many of these apps. I know in Singapore they were using an app, but it didn't work on iPhones because on an iPhone, once you close the app or turn the phone off and put it in your pocket, the Bluetooth stops working. So Apple and Google are now having a new approach, which will allow Bluetooth to function even when the phone's in your pocket and you're not looking at it. But the apps, I don't think, are quite ready yet. So it's going to be probably available soon, but not right now. I don't know which government agency should be in charge. And I think it may be the kind of thing that's just provided through the Apple store, through the Android store and so on. And it's up to people themselves to choose to download it and install it. And the government can just recommend that they do it with public service announcements.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Ben. And that was Benjamin Cowling, Professor of Infectious Disease Epidemiology at the University of Hong Kong. And so I liked his point about China there, which is basically the fact that China is already running a kind of a sort of an Orwellian Big Brother surveillance system. So they've been doing their contact tracing more through that rather than through through an app. Instead, they have a health status app, as Ben pointed out.
Yeah, they don't ask you. They just do it, right? They monitor everything.
I think a lot of countries are a long way from having that kind of surveillance system in place.
But that brings up an interesting point, right? So what's the ideal way? Because, you know, you do, if this virus is going to be with us, you know, until a vaccine is found, then yes, you know, we want to hang on to some of the liberal values that we are used to, right? The, you know, the fact that the government isn't monitoring us, that we have freedom
that
of
movement. That we know of.
Yeah, and that we have freedom of movement. But these are very different times, right? So, i.e., what is the delicate balance here? Because, you know, these apps are proven in some way to help, you know, to kind of contain the virus, because you need to quarantine those who have been exposed. Otherwise, you know, you're always going to have a third, fourth, fifth wave of infection. But I guess there is no solution. And also the question is, who's going to be running these apps? Who's behind it, right? Like in Malaysia, we have three. So I'm confused. Although they do say there are three, because one is meant for the public, one is for the frontliners, and one for the authorities. But a consolidated approach is better. And also, I think transparency. So the government says install it, but they need to come up with a definitive kind of announcement. We do not monitor where you're going. We do not, you know, use this data for these purposes. We only do it for a certain purpose. Then I think people are reassured, and then they might install it.
Yeah, or we only have access to this level of data and not anymore. Security concerns appear to be the biggest hesitance, I guess, for people in downloading a contact tracing app. Because on the poll that we were running on the BFM Twitter account, of the 190 votes, a good half of them said that they wouldn't download a contact tracing app because of privacy concerns. 20% said, you know, yes, it's the responsible thing to do. 13% said yes, if directed by the government. But the no votes outweigh these at the moment.
I would download it, though. I would think it's my social responsibility. But that's me, because I don't want a fourth, fifth wave of infection. And I think these are unusual times.
See, I wouldn't, you know. Yeah. I would. There's privacy concerns for me is the biggest thing. I don't want to normalize a system of surveillance. I don't want to have no control whatsoever over my data. And yes, I know you can argue that your data already goes to all these big tech companies anyway, but there's just something about the idea of this data going to the government that makes me hesitate before I press download.
Yeah, I think the government will have to kind of come up with some solutions and maybe some reassuring words before people do it.
Absolutely. Now, right now, though, we are about to head into some messages. And after that, we'll be taking a look at the pharmaceuticals industry and the race for a vaccine with Sam Fazeli, senior healthcare analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Keep it here. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.